Hey, you know, it's like popping a string. You just keep going.
Dude.
You don't stop.
Yeah, that's right. And now you're like, oh, damn. What would be the worst string to break for you, Hubert, on a gig?
On a gig would probably be that, the D string.
The D string?
Why do you say the D string?
Yeah. I find myself just thinking about it. I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm kind of on that string a lot.
Yeah.
So and you'd have to skip to get that space between that G. That would be kind of crazy for me.
Yeah. What about you, Ian? Which for you?
I'm an A string guy. I feel like I play a lot of octave pedal stuff, and so the A string. I've said a lot that if I could just have one string, it would be the A string always.
Oh, I'm all E string. This is fascinating, isn't it? I'm all E string. Isn't it strange how we've picked different strings? I'm all E string.
If you broke that E, you're dead. Wow. Huh? Yeah.
I had to actually, one time, like a long time ago, I had a really low action on my bass and I broke a string on a gig. And because of the tension on, because of like when you remove one string, the neck like goes back a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So it went back and all of the other strings just went flat against the fretboard.
Yes.
Except the E string.
So
I had to like play the entire gig on this freaking...
That E string was your best friend that night.
Oh, dude.
Yes,
dude.
That was your homeboy.
It like traumatized me. It traumatized me. I was like, after that experience, like it was the first set of a gig actually. And I can remember,
oh my God.
Yeah, one of the tracks was like Blame It on the Boogie. And I was like, get out. Like, how am I even going to do this? Like, I mean, on one string. I gave it a shot, though. I was just like,
oh man,
play it with conviction and play it like you mean it and just hope for the best. That's right. That's what I went with.
Nobody's going to know.
Dude, yeah. Hubert, I cannot believe, we were talking earlier about that album that you did with Erykah Badu. Ian and I were talking about it, and we were questioning, and we were listening to it actually and freaking out, just to be transparent. We were like listening to it and then I was pausing it and I was like, oh, like
we were like, and,
I was like, yeah, like basically like 2 8-year-old kids. And I was wondering, like, and obviously, and all, I will also add as well, just to sort of like stroke your ego and make you feel awesome, that out of all of the awesome albums that's ever been recorded, if somebody was like, out of all of the albums ever recorded, if you could have played on 5 albums, so you could listen to it and you'd be like, that's me playing that bass. That Erykah Badu live album would be in my top 5 albums. I'm just like, like, honestly, man, like,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Like, I think that like it had a huge, huge impact on me as a bass player, but not just me, like everybody I knew was, it was like 97, right? So it was tapes and everybody's passing around tapes and everybody's like, oh, have you heard this album? It is like the bass and the drums on this album are like a completely new thing, new approach. And like, did you know it at the time?
First of all, thank you very much, man. I really, really appreciate that.
Oh, man, it's all good.
To all the bass players, I'm grateful. Thank you. But no, to answer your question, I had no clue. And I'll tell you something, a little inside. A lot of times I felt like I should be playing more because the music was very simple, right?
That's super interesting, yeah.
And everything had a groove to it.
Yes.
But it didn't really call for more.
Yeah.
It called for discipline, less is best. But there were times when I would be playing, I'm like, I should throw something in here. I should be doing something. It doesn't need it. Just close your eyes, play your 3 or 4 notes and pick your spots, like Pac-Man, I eat a little bit here, then I stop, let somebody else eat, and then we keep going. And
yeah.
So I didn't know that the impact that it would have, but I'm definitely grateful. And you know, it was a team. It was the band. It was Erica. You know, she was driving the ship.
Yeah.
All the vocalists and playing with Fuji and Keys. I mean, I think that supporting cast was just like incredible. Yeah. So,
and it was a trio.
Yeah, I had no clue, man.
Dude, it was a trio. It was a trio. Like a trio.
Nope, we popped the string again.
Oh, so good. So good. What were you going to ask, Ian? I wanted to ask something.
Well, I wanted to say, to mirroring Scott's comments, that record came out for me in a time when I was listening to a bunch of like prog rock. And it was the record for me that I went, oh my God. Like, it completely changed the trajectory of my playing 100%. And I started to think about, like, there was this value that you seemed to place in restraint. I'm so happy to hear you talk about like the struggle of like, I wonder if I should be playing more here. But you decided, I mean, like, we were listening to Tyrone today, where you're playing boom, dum, boom, dum, dum, and then you go boom, boom. That shit is so sick, because it's like you drop those last two G flats or whatever, and they feel so heavy. Like, Scott and I were like, aah! Like, it feels so heavy. So here's my question to you on that. Like, with this eye toward restraint, was that coming from the camp? Did the camp value space? Or was it coming from you where, like, when you did try to insert more playing, it didn't feel right? Like, where was the value of restraint coming for in that era for you?
I think it was just something that was felt, you know. It was a vibe. It was also the respect that I have for the music. You know, whenever I learn someone's material, I try to do it justice by not, you know, because I write and I produce, yeah, and you know, I can always, you know, change something around and you know, make it my own. But it's not. It's to be respected. Mm. And enhanced when you can. So that's what I always try to do. Learn the song, enhance it, you know, if it's cool. And, you know, Erica gave us a lot of freedom, her and the musical director, Norman Hurt. We yeah. call him Keys. Mm. And, you know, like I said, I would pick my spots.
Yes.
And a lot of times, Fuji and I, we would look at each other for certain things. And we would like read each other's mind. It was really incredible, man. It was that whole gig was just an incredible experience.
Yeah.
And
it was the first time for me. Oh God, sorry, that video went out of whack. It was the first time for me, and I was saying this to Ian earlier, that it wasn't like, hey, we've got like it's a G flat vibe, you know, and you kind of grooving. It was like they're very, very specific parts
yes.
Yeah, like it's a real fantastic example of like playing with discipline, playing parts and using space like in an otherworldly way, like yeah. Just what Ian was saying there, just like this is like Tyrone. For anybody that's listening right now, check this out. This is rough. It's just through my mic, so everybody's just got to put up with it. But just check out the space. It's incredible.
Nothing.
Just this acres of space.
Yeah.
It's still mind-blowing. It really is, because I'm not sure, hand on heart, I could have the discipline to do what you did and sure. to have the maturity in that situation to hear the entire ensemble and be like, this is exactly what it needs. Just this right here. I just don't think I would do. How old were you when you actually recorded that, Hubert?
Let's see, Tyrone. I think that was, I hear it was 20 years ago now, right?
Yeah.
So I was about 35.
No, it was more than it was more than 20 years ago, right?
Was it?
Well, 97.
How many years ago is that? Never do public math. ever.
I'm telling you. Pause. Pause this recording.
No, it's like 25 years ago.
25, yeah.
25.
So you'd have been 30. Oh, yeah, dude. I would have been sort of like nowhere near sort of like mature enough now. Like, I'm coming up to 44. I'm still not mature enough. Like, it's a real...
I bet. You would have been killing us. I know you.
That would have been a problem, though. I would have been, the headline would have been, too many notes, dude. Too many notes.
And Hubert, when you're...
Well, you know, Erica...
Go ahead, man. Yeah. I'm sorry. We've got this odd delay. Please.
No, not a problem. I think your question would be more interesting than what I had to say.
Well, no, I just wanted to ask you, in all the material, like since that recording and even before, how valuable to you is cutoff? Like, is note duration? I think it's something that doesn't get maybe talked about enough. We think about attack, we think about playing the note, but often I think sometimes we forget about when to exit the note, when to mute the note. And has that been something that's like super important to you over time?
That's an excellent question, man. I've actually never been asked that one, but, and it's extremely important because I think what helps me is the fact that I write and I produce, and I'm used to looking at the computer screen. I'm looking at notes. I see when they cut off, when they
on the grid, yeah.
And everything is like a musical conversation. So one thing is speaking, and it has to stop, so something else can answer, or something else can interject in a way where it makes sense. So those cutoffs are very deliberate. They're not accidental. That's something that's very, very important. Yeah.
That is super great question, man. Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. Again,
I've got a friend that mixes, then he talks about this thing of a revolving door where he says, or like a spinning cake case, right? Like in a bakery where there's something that's highlighted that's meant for you to see, but then it rotates out of view. And then there's a new thing that you're supposed to see, and that he thinks about mixes that way. What's the most important thing, right, in the mix? Well, in this moment, it's the drum fill, but in this moment, it's the vocal in this moment, right? And always thinking about what's that thing to highlight. And that, dude, and you're playing, it makes so much sense to me that you are a producer and you're thinking about productions because you play like you have a global understanding of what's happening in the production versus just like, I can tell you're never thinking what sick bad shit lick am I going to play, you know, at the end of this eight bars. You're not thinking that. You're thinking like, if I cut this note off here, it's going to let the or the hi-hat breathe or, and it's just, it's amazing, man. It's amazing.
Yeah. And on top of being a producer. Yeah,
that's a great question.
On Cheers, top of being man. A producer as well, Hubert, you're obviously like a killing drummer as well, right? So you're really seeing the entire picture. Like, what other instruments do you play? Is it obviously bass, drums, keys as well, is it?
I play keys enough to write. Like, you know, I've played bass keys, bass synth on gigs, but yeah. By no means am I a keyboard player, but the majority of the songs that I write on keyboards. Mm. To be honest with you.
That's interesting, yeah.
And I play a little bit of guitar, but nothing serious. Like, I might play, you know, a guitar track here and there on some of my stuff, but in most cases, man, I'll get the guys in that can enhance, you know, what I'm trying to do. You know, I don't have to do Fantastic. Everything. Those days are over. Been over.
And were you learning as a kid? Because obviously your dad was like a producer, right? So he's a great musician. Like, when did you first start picking up instruments around the house? How old were you?
Well, my dad got me a drum set when I was 3.
Wow.
Right? So I was just banging, making noise, being annoying, you know, for probably a few years. And then I really started, I'd say like around 7 or 8, showing signs of being really serious.
Yeah.
Because I would practice on my own, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to do was play drums. And I played in different bands as a kid. I hope I'm looking in the camera. I might be looking cross-eyed or something.
You're great, dude.
Okay.
You're great.
Yeah, so, yeah, I would play in different bands here and there. And do talent shows and stuff like that. And then when I hit, I think like around 12 or 13, I was in a band playing drums. And whenever we took a break, the bass player would sit on my drums and play. My dad bought me a bass, which was, my first bass was a Collarwood Belly, and it was Lefty.
Whoa.
And I don't like Mono Neon. I don't know how he does it, but you know, yeah. I'm no Mono Neon, so that didn't work. So we you know, we had to take care of that. But that was how, you know, my bass days started. And then I stopped playing drums for a long time. You know, I would fumble around with it here and there, but
yeah,
that's how it started. Yeah.
And when did you know for sure you were like, oh, actually, I'm going to do this as a career? Or was it kind of always there with your dad doing what he did?
I think it was always there. It was, I always had like a natural feel for music and a love for music. And I went to all my dad's rehearsals, all of the studio sessions. You know, I saw so many different sessions and was around so many great musicians. I kind of feel like I was just kind of groomed to just do this, you know. And it wasn't a thing where I felt like, I don't want to do this. I got to go play. You know, I mean, I did go through a small period when I was trying to play basketball and, you know, girls and all that stuff. So I didn't want to have to come home and practice. My dad would make me practice, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it didn't take long for me to want to come home and just play and just do my thing. And did he, with
what you were saying just there, just bouncing off of that, like, was it, because obviously when you were really young, it was probably you were just sort of like picking it up, practicing on your own. Like, at what point do you think that your dad was like, I need to kind of sort of like start either, I guess, making it feel exciting for you, taking you along to the studio, like that whole side of things? Or, and when was he like, dude, you need to practice, like get practice? When did that become, or if did it ever become like that?
From what I can recall, I would say like when I was maybe like 12, 13, my dad saw that I was really serious about it, and that, cause he would actually include me in on some of his recordings. You know, I would play, I would play bass, or I would play drums. You know, he always had some kind of a studio in the house. You know, back then it was some kind of reel to reel situation going on. And then, he would put me on recordings, and, you know, I used to want to thump all over the place, and he would be like, no, slow down.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yes. Yeah, I had my thumb was much bigger back then, and my dad, he's really the one that taught me about space and letting things breathe, because I had no clue. If I was playing drums, I was playing fills all over the place.
Of course,
bass, I was, you know, thumping through everything. And you know, also, like, you know, we touched on earlier, writing and producing kind of hones you in, and my dad, being a writer and a producer, you know, he was like, no, this is, you know, there's sections to this. You can't play through everything. And, you know, amazing. I was all about the funk. I was all about, you know, Parliament, P-Funk, and Bootsy. I used to call myself Hootsy. I didn't believe in changes.
Amazing. Like, yeah.
The songs that I would write back then were just straight grooves, no bridge, you know, no nothing. And my dad would say, he used to call me Little Hugh. They still call me Little Hugh from time to time. Say, Little Hugh, nah, man, there's other colors. You gotta reach. You gotta. And I thank him so much now, but back then I couldn't stand to hear that stuff.
It's so painful in real time, right? It's so painful to have an elder, whether it's your father or someone you respect, say what you're doing is not up to snuff yet. But then, as you look back, right, it becomes this thing where you go, oh, that was so right. Even though, like, sometimes the stuff that hurts the most, right, is the stuff that's actually the most true. And you kind of deep down, you know it. Exactly. It hurts so much. Man, you're so fortunate to have a father that did that for you, man. That's so cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah, please, man. Tell me.
Hey, this is a funny one. True story. I'll make it quick. my dad and I, we were in the basement in the studio. We were jamming, and he stopped me, and he's like, because he kept trying to go to a bridge, and I wouldn't follow him. I just stayed. It was probably in jamming in E, E minor or whatever, and I would just stay there. And he stopped. He said, "Look, we need a bridge. We need a release. You know, your ears, people's ears are going to get tired of being there. Let's go somewhere." And I was like, "Why? This is funky." And he's like, "Little Hugh, you know, if you listen to hit records, you know, there's a beginning, there's a middle, there's a, you know, it progresses." And I said, "You don't have no hits." And my dad, he got so pissed, he started stuttering and, "What do you mean I don't have no hits? Blah, 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 blah." And he threw me out of the basement, and I realized I made a mistake. And then he went on and wrote one of the biggest hits that he's ever co-wrote with D-Train, "You're the One for Me." I don't know if you guys have ever heard that.
Whoa, and then, crazy.
He came at me and said, "You want to stand by that statement?" I was just joking, Dad.
You know, but your dad might have needed that little push. You know, sometimes that father and son dynamic, you know, like my son has said a couple of things to me. My son is 7, you know, but he said a couple of things to me that I'm like, "Oh, dang." Like, you know, there might be, like you hinted, you pushed on something that was also true. Like he was pushing on things for you that were true, right? That like, "Oh, you gotta find this next phase. You gotta go to a bridge. You gotta leave space." And then you said, "But why should I listen to you?" Right? I mean, that was kind of that's the underlying thing, right? Like you're talking from this place of authority, but why should I respect your authority? And then exactly. That pushed him to go do something, man. That's beautiful. Sure did. That's actually really beautiful.
And boy, did he. Every time it came on the radio, he'd look at me and say, "I still don't have no hits."
Dude, that's the ultimate "I told you so," you know? It's like just looking back, you know, in the car, like.
Just gives you that glance.
Yeah. Oh. I had to eat that one.
Hubert. In addition to your dad being so pivotal for you, what were you mentioned Bootsy, who were the bass players for you, or like who captured your imagination and provided you with inspiration that you wanted to pick that instrument up, that you wanted to play all the fills, you wanted to slap? Like who were the big players for you?
Number one was definitely Bootsy. Mm-hmm. I tell you a bass player who had a big influence on me. And that wasn't his main instrument, but as far as I'm concerned, he sure played it like it was Prince. I love his bass playing, man. I really did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. But,
so Bootsy, Prince, and you know, then you know, the other masters, you know, your Marcus, your Victor, your Byron Miller's another one was a killer, man. When I heard that solo on Reach For It, that kind of that killed me. And and you know, a lot of guys that really inspire me are friends, you know, people that I came up with, you know, they might not be household names, but you know, they're like unsung. They're just like, they do stuff that's like, golly. So many guys,
man.
And I tell you what, this is absolutely true. You guys are absolutely no joke. That's why I'm so happy to be here with you, because both of you guys are killer bass players, killer musicians. And I've actually been watching your videos on YouTube and stuff for years. And I came across, honestly, from the heart, I don't know, I think a friend of mine, Damon Mendez, a drummer, he sent me a video clip, I think it was from 2017, of Scott talking about, he's like, "Oh, this guy Hubert Eves IV, I think he's playing drums now. I don't know what he's doing." And I was like, "Holy snap. I've been watching this guy's YouTube video." Right? And then I see Ian up amazing. There killing, doing his thing. So I'm definitely influenced by you guys too, as well.
And man.
That has nothing to do with this podcast. My wife, she's upstairs right now. She's so excited for me because she knows how much this means to me. This is really nice.
Oh. Oh, dude, man.
Kill me now. Yeah. I can die. Hubert, that's 100%. Generous, man. Thank you so much. That's very generous.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Mind-blowing, really mind-blowing to, yeah, because like just knowing that, you know, just thinking about me, like when I was younger, listening to your, I would have just never believed that, you know, that I'd be able to hang out with you like this. And honestly, I hope to hang out with you in person when we get over to New York as well. That would be amazing. Like we're doing
that. That's done. Yeah. You just say the words.
Well, dude, we're planning to do like a talk show.
That's amazing. Like
a bass talk show. We would love
Scott,
you to come
Scott
on that.
Scott froze up for a minute. Can you still hear me, Hubert?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, wicked, wicked.
There
yeah,
we go.
I would love. We would love for you to be on that talk show. It would be a blast, you know. And we're going to record it all in person. So we're going to do. Hopefully, we're going to do a run out in LA. We'll do a run in New York. We're going to do something here in London as well. So it's like you've got to come out and hang with us there. That would be
my bonkers. Pleasure, man.
Dude, and you've got to bring the bass as well. I'm like, I've been staring at that bass over your shoulder. Like, if, like, yeah, that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, oh, dude. Like,
how long have
you had that bass? Yeah, like, how long have you had that bass?
I had that bass since, I think, like 95, something like that.
Wow.
So that is the bass that you recorded those albums with as well, yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. That bass is like, if I could make my dream bass, that would be it. That's it.
Well, we Ian and I were talking just earlier, right? You are a really great example of somebody that's just got, you've just got one bass and it's like part of your DNA almost, right? Has that been a conscious decision or did you just fall in love with that bass and you've just never looked elsewhere? Like, what's the story there?
Well, that particular bass, I've had a few different MTDs, and that one just always, even the engineers, when I would play that one, they would always say, Hubert, the brown one, the brown one, the brown one, the brown one. Mm. You know, I would pull out the, you know, other crazy colors, the brown one. So, and I always felt it was just reliable. I know how to get whatever sound out of it I need to get, and I can play almost anything with it. Matter of fact, I got another one coming. I should have it maybe, hopefully, it'll be done by tomorrow. It's supposed to be done. I spoke to Mike a few days ago. He said it'll be playable by Friday. And
amazing. Whew,
wait till you see this one. It's going to be a killer. But this particular bass here, it's, you know, it's my favorite, definitely.
And what on the new one, what have you gone with? Like similar woods or different woods? Because at least Mike's, like I've never owned an MTD, but when I read about them online, everybody talks about that there's a big depending on what woods you choose, there's, you know, it can sound like a completely different bass. Like what have you gone with this new one that you're getting built?
The new one is it's a tulip wood. And has a maple neck, bird's eye maple neck. And Mike basically, he was like, look, Hubert, I know your sound. Trust me. I got you. So one thing about me, to be honest, completely honest with you, I'm not a real tech head when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like what I like. I know what I like. But I don't get into like some guys can tell you about, you know, the spacing is this and this and that. Like, God bless you. You know, that's great. I just know when I like something and when I don't. So,
yeah, yeah. And no, that makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny though, the MTD, man, the way I got introduced to it, I went to a Rudy's Music Shop in Manhattan years ago. Yeah. And I was ready. I had just enough money, couple thousand dollars, whatever it was in my pocket to buy the Zahn bass. That's what I went there for.
Yes. Oh, wow.
And my man that works there, Dean, he was like, Hugh, have you ever played MTD? I had never even heard of it. I'm like, no. He goes, well, this is Mike Tobias. He kind of has his own thing now. Why don't you check that out? So I start playing it and it blew me away. And then the price tag blew me away. I said, man, I can't afford it. It was about something like that. I'm like,
yeah. Oh.
So I said to Dean, we're in the shop talking. I said, so does Mike do any kind of endorsements or anything like that? And he said, I don't know, man. You know, you should like talk to him. Maybe one day, you know, you know, you can, you know, just holler at them and see. Guess who walks in the store? Just total coincidence. Mike Tobias. Not
Mike Tobias. Holy!
He was making a delivery of some MTD bases. So Dean says, there's Mike right there. And, you know, I'll introduce you.
Wow.
So he introduced me to him. And we're talking, and I asked him about endorsements, and he basically shot me down. He was like, I really don't do endorsements. You know, I think he may have had some weird experiences with it or whatever. And as we're talking,
yeah,
a customer walks up to us, interrupts our conversation, and I'm thinking, that's rude. What's up? And the guy goes, hey, to me, I just saw you on the Chris Rock show. You were killing, blah, blah, blah. So Mike Tobias looked at me like, who'd you say you were again? So I didn't get an endorsement, but we worked out a deal to where I was able to get an MTD. And that's how I got my first MTD.
And was that your first MTD?
That was my very first, yeah.
That was your first one. The one behind you now is your first one, yeah.
No, not this one. No.
That was it. You had a different one going.
Yeah, I had a different one. But this is this one right here is like, that's it. That's it for me.
Wow.
Yeah, because like for me, like that is like obviously it's the way you play it, but it has a really, really like specific sound. Like a really, I mean, like it's a signature sound. And I think that a lot of MTDs have got like a very specific sound to them. And when I listen to you play, that is like part of your DNA, part of that tone, you know, it's to do with the MTD as well. So that is, it's almost like if you didn't meet Mike then, your sound might have developed in a different way over your life, which would have been incredible. Wow. What a great story, man.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. I'm so glad I met him.
Hubert, yeah, do you know the guy? The guy that came in to and said like, oh man, you were killing on the Chris Rock show. Do you know who that was?
I had no clue. I didn't know him to this day. I'm grateful to you, dude, that walked into Rudy's and mentioned me. Thank you.
Yeah. That guy was doing the Lord's work.
It would be wild if
you
listened to this. Yes. Dude, if somebody listens to this podcast and it was you in Rudy's, like, please message either I or Ian on Instagram and just be like, it was me.
Yeah.
Help us connect those dots.
Yeah, me too. I'd like to
see message Hubert as well, yeah.
Say, what's up?
Yes. Oh, man. So you have this... I love that you mentioned that you're not tech savvy, or that you those weren't your words. You said that you didn't really care about that stuff, string spacing. You know what you like, and when you find it, you love it. And I am the opposite, but I want to be closer to that. Like it sounds like such a healthy position to be in with your gear. Is there any other piece of gear for you that you've come across, whether it be an amp or a pedal or a preamp or any kind of thing that feels like an indispensable tool in your arsenal for live or studio? Is there a go-to Hubert thing that you got to have in addition to your bass? And if not, that's amazing, actually. Like, if not, that's so cool. It's just like these 10 fingers and a bass guitar, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like, I don't use a whole bunch of pedals and a bunch of tricks. Yeah. You know, I mean, I got all of the pedals and stuff, but I hardly ever use them, you know. My amp, I use DNA amp, which I love. That sucker kicks. Yeah. So I definitely want to have that with me. Just as long as I got the right strings on my bass, and you know, I use GHS boomers. I've been using those for years. And
classics.
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm very simple, you know. Back in the day, I would use a GK800RB because it's just so simple. You know, I would see a lot of players are using the stuff with the parametric EQs and all of this stuff, and I'm like, just give me, if I could have an amp with one knob on it, that's me. A bass with one knob, that's me. I'm very, very like simple. And you would think that I, you know, how does this guy even mix a record? You know, how does he produce? Because I'm not really that into technical stuff, but I have what I believe is I have a good ear. So I know what I like, and I know how to get that the sound that I want. You know, whether you like it or not, that's something else. But, you know, I just go for it, man. There's no method to the madness. I just figure it out and make it happen.
And does that translate across into like when you play drums, when you're producing in the studio? Like, it sounds to me that you've got like, I guess a minimalistic approach to, and I think that really comes across it when I listen to how you, like that groove we were like listening to earlier, it was just this sort of like huge fat groove, masses of space.
Pocket like it, city.
And
yes.
It, so when you say, yeah, it's not really, I just need a bass, some strings, I need a big fat amp. I'm like, yeah, that is kind of what I expected, but. Does that translate into the studio as well? Not from a bass perspective, but when you're like actually like mixing, like in the box kind of thing. Like, does that translate or not?
I think when I'm mixing or producing, I'm way more. When I say technical, I don't mean it in like a numbers kind of way where I'm saying I got to take 10 dB or like that. But I'm very, very detailed. I pay attention to everything, you know, if I'm editing, every little thing, like Ian had mentioned before, cutoff notes and stuff like that, all of that stuff counts. So, I'll do stuff over and over and over. And when you hear it, you may think, oh, that's not a big deal. But if you saw what I had to go through to make some things work, you'd probably say, wow, that took some time. And I take my time with this stuff. You know, I don't just put stuff out, you know, at a pace where it's like boom, 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 boom. Because me, it's all about quality, and I hope that's a goal that I accomplish when I do put songs out, or if I do a production. You know, my goal is always to make things sound bigger and better each time.
Well, dude, that single that you did called Radio was basically a great, you know, example of what you just talked about.
It
sounds incredible. Incredible. Like, my wife and I really don't like sort of like the same music. So I don't really like, I don't sit down and say, hey, Lisa, check out this track. But that track, I was like, Lisa, you've got to check this track out.
Wow.
It broke the wife barrier. It made it across the chasm, right? It is like, I'm sure I've got it here, dude. Like, and the groove as well is crazy on this thing. Let me see if I can pull it up.
Having trouble learning.
Ads, YouTube ads.
Remix.
Everybody's cut. Yeah. We've got like,
Hubert, are you mixing all of this?
Dude.
Do you mix all of this music? That's you. Actually, that's you mixing.
Yeah, I engineered and mixed that one. Yeah.
Damn. It's
did
so
you
write, crisp.
Did you
and
write
clean.
It as well? It's so clean, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Did you write it all?
Yeah, this one I wrote. I wrote, I mixed it. I played bass. I played drums on it. I played a little bit of guitar on there and some keyboards. But I had some help, too. I got my dad on there playing. He's playing acoustic piano.
Nice.
Horn section. They're called chops. They just kill the song, you know. They are,
dude.
They sure do.
It's so clean, isn't it? It's so clean. I'm just gonna play like 15 more seconds of it for everyone to listen to. Check it out.
Ooh.
Just just
it's like
bass like bass constantly.
Masses of depth in it. It's like one of those mixes which is just sort of like there's like loads of depth, like loads of layers, isn't there? Like when I listened to it, actually, I wondered how many, like how many parts there were. Like when you wrote that, like how long from when you started with that idea did it take to get to the end, given that it's so intricate and the production on it is completely bonkers?
Thank you.
And the bass and the bass solo as well, dude, the bass solo.
It's crazy. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. Thank you. That's that monster right there.
Oh, so good, man.
That song, to be honest, man, it took a long time. It did. It took, because there's so many different versions of it, right?
Got it. Yeah.
Like I was experimenting with different kind of drum beats, and at first I had like a straight beat because I know that this one was kind of syncopated, and you know, like I would play it for people, and some people didn't know where the one was, things like that. And then I didn't like the straight beat, so I said, you know what? If you don't know where the one was, move on over, because that person behind you just might. So I'm gonna stick to my guns, and yeah. I'm glad that I did, and. It just kept evolving. I kept changing things, adding different things, and by the time it was all done, man, it took me about a good almost 8 months, 9 months just to do that song. Mm-hmm. And mixing it was
so
was hell. That was hell. It was so many tracks. I think it was 80 something tracks.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it just sounds so deep. I mean, like the depth of the actual mix. And it's got, like, everybody should definitely check it out. It's on YouTube. Just search Hubert Eaves the Fourth Radio. You'll find it. And check it out. It's got this beautiful bass solo in the middle of it. Mm. Where you hit, like, a major seven on a minor chord. And for me, I appreciate that, dude. There's, like, a... I appreciate that shit, dude. where is it? Ah. Right there. Oh yeah. I was like, oh yeah, man, so good. So good.
Hubert, when you're soloing, man, when you take a solo, are you can you run us through a little bit of thought process? Are you playing, are you improvising straight improv where you're not thinking? Are you approaching it in any type of way? Can you just talk about your solo concept for a minute?
Sure. Like I mentioned before, with equipment, in terms of being technical, it's the same with my soloing. I'm not the guy who's going to, you know, burn up and down the neck. That's not my style. I'd be a liar and a pretender if I said it was. Mm-hmm. What I do is I sing what I hear. Solo. I sang that solo. And then I figured it out, and I play it that way. But like if the song was just going, I would probably play something totally different. But the best solo that I'm going to do is something that I sing, something that I sit down and I live with the track. And this way, it just kind of fits better for me because of, I mean, I'm just being honest with you, man. I'm not the kind of bass player where I can look at the chords, you know, and say, okay, this fits over that and... this, I can do that. That's not me. You know, I have to listen to it. I have to sit with it and kind of like sing, you know, what I feel.
Yeah. So it's really coming from your ear. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Love that. Dude, have you thought about putting a band together?
I was just, please. That's blessed.
Yeah, it's funny that you asked, man. I was talking to my wife this morning about that. I swear to God, I just told her before we started speaking, because I have a current single out that just came out, 3 weeks
ago?
Yeah,
yeah. Dot da da. Yeah, dot da da. Yes, it's amazing. Yeah.
Dot di da.
Dot di da. That's it. Yeah.
Thank you. And I was telling her, because I got a bunch of other stuff that I haven't released yet, that it's time for me to do a little showcase. And it I was just time. Telling her what songs I want to use. And she was asking me what people are going to use. And I was like, that's the dilemma. Cause I know so many people and so many friends. And if you you call this one, you don't call that one. This one's mad, and you know, so I'm like,
these musicians, who'd have them, eh?
hey, but it's definitely something that I'm looking into doing really, really soon. Yeah.
What do you think the lineup would be?
It's funny because someone asked me that recently, and I mentioned, for me to do the show the way that I want to do it, it's not going to be cheap, and I will not go out because I've been offered to do hits with tracks, like track dates, and
got it. Yeah.
Not going to happen. I need a horn section. I need another bass player. I need probably two keyboard players. I need a couple of vocalists. So it's going to be expensive. So it's going to take me a minute to put this together. But when I do, I think it's going to be kind of different. It's going to be cool.
You should absolutely do it. You should do it, man.
Please do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scott and I are going to be in the front row, dude. We're going to follow you on tour, man.
Yeah. Like screaming girls.
You got to put a wig on, though, man. Come on.
dude, if there's one thing that I need, it's a wig, man. Like, I'm all for
it. Me too.
Yeah. Dude, do you bick the head?
Well, I mean, that was my question too, was that when are we going to get to see your show? I mean, you just need to know that there's an appetite for it. There's absolutely an appetite for it. And, you know, not that you would, but don't get bogged down in those details, man. Put that show together. Bless us with that show, man. Like, I want it so bad. It'd be so fun to see you live and hear you. And, you know, we would love to get you involved with some more stuff at SBL in that regard as well. It'd be so cool.
Hey, man, you guys are inspiring me even more. So it's, you're making it happen even quicker. Trust me.
Okay. Oh, okay, let me throw this at you. Okay, so how about this? So we do this talk show thing where we're going to be doing it like I mentioned it before. We're doing stuff like a bunch of them down in LA. We're planning to do a bunch of them in New York. You come in one day, we do like an episode where you're the main guest of the talk show, and then you get a band in and we film it as part of the talk show for you to do one track. Would you be up for that?
Of course. Of course. That sounds
down in history. Come on. Yeah, man. That would be so freaking awesome. I would love to make that happen. Yeah, I'd love to make that.
That would be slam, man. I'm definitely into that.
Yeah. I'll play tambourine.
you can come on up there and jam with us, man. Like I said.
Oh man, it'd be amazing. Like, we're really, Ian and I are really excited about this talk show idea at the minute. Yeah. It's something we've been talking about in the team, because what we're trying to do is just create something that nobody else is doing within the, you know, within this world of bass, because they are kind of doing it in different niches. But nobody's doing it in the world of bass. And we were just talking yesterday. We're thinking about running like four pilot episodes in London. And I was like, wouldn't it be great to get like Galen Dorsey? Who did we say? Tony Levin for one. Mm-hmm. Like, just sort of like, I just think it'd be so great. And the idea is that the talk show is all really about listening to the tracks that you've done before, like all of the tracks that you've played on, and then just geeking out about them and just saying like, okay, like play that line that like teach us how to do it. Ian and I are gonna have the basses, and the artists they're gonna be showing us how they played it and stuff like that. We're gonna be talking about their approach. I think it'd be great, man.
I would love to have you, dude. Please
just reach out to me. That's
we will deal, brother. We will make it happen. Man. And yes. Hubert, let me ask you this, Hubert.
Go for it. So
there's so many people that are going to be watching this content who are going to be at a more of like a starting point in their trajectory, right? So there are a number of intermediate advanced players that check out SBL, but increasingly we have a lot of beginners who are just starting out. And I love to ask this of everybody that we're talking to, but if you could go back and give young, like if Hubert now could go back and give young Hubert some advice or a word, what would that word be to a tenacious kid starting out on this journey?
It would definitely be to learn as much of everything as you can. Don't concentrate on one style of music. Don't concentrate on just using your ear. Reading theory is so important. I wish that I would have spent more time on it. I think it would have made me be able to get to certain things a lot faster. And like we were touching on a minute about looking at a chord chart, you know, I'm sure you guys can look at it and say, I could play this over that. I could play that over that. And when you have that along with what's coming from your heart, you're like unstoppable. You can be put into any situation and you're going to shine, you know. And when you have your theory down, you can get up there like an open mic situation. You may not know the song, so you may not play it like a record, but you're still going to sound good. But when you're just dependent on, you know, limited resources, you're going to be exposed at times. And I've been guilty of that because I didn't take the time, as much time, I should say, because I can read a little bit. I'm not great at it, but, you know, I have the fundamentals. But definitely learn. Don't worry about the flash. Don't worry about playing all the notes and being fancy. Learn, just like in basketball, a layup. Don't worry about dunking. Do a layup first, right? Do your dribbling, your drills, your chromatics, all the simple stuff. All of that stuff helps. Like, just slow down, take it easy. Learn as much as you can. That's what I was.
That's like a focus, great word.
Yeah, focus on the fundamentals. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Man, I would love to go back in time and give myself a little word in the ear as well. We've got some really funny like music reading stories that we've talked about. Like Ian's got some hilarious music. Like, do you know where he's got himself in hot water with like reading? And so I'm like, somebody's like handed him a chart and he's like, okay.
Oh yeah.
We've all got them stories. Have you got any of them stories, Hubert? Yeah.
Oh man, I remember being at Montreux Jazz Festival, and I was playing with Alex Boone Young, and Phil Perry was going on after us, and his band they missed their flight. Something happened, so they needed a band, right? Boom, we were leaving the stage, and they were like, "Listen, can you guys stay up?" You know, and we were like, oh, and they were like, "We got charts." And I was like, oh God, you know, I can read, but I'm not the greatest reader.
Yeah.
So they gave us charts, and they gave me the wrong chart. The chart that I had was not the correct chart. Oh. So I started off wrong.
Oh.
So somebody came and snatched the chart away, and then it was just up to me to, you know, play by ear. And, you know, I figured it out eventually, but that was like, my heart was going like this.
Did you sweat? I'm a sweater. Like when things start going wrong for me, like it's like, it just starts it's crazy. Yeah.
I sweat. I got another one that's really, really funny, man. Hilarious.
Please.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
I was playing with Randy Crawford and.
Oh, amazing.
We were playing Street Life. And I'm surprised I'm telling this story because I never really admit to it.
Oh, but I love it.
We're playing Street Life. I just got on the gig. We were playing with Alex, and we were also backing Randy up. And we went to the bridge. I knew that bridge inside out, played it a million times. I blanked out. I don't know what happened. And we got to the bridge. I just stopped playing. And everybody looked. They turned around. They looked at me like, what's going on? I turned around and looked at the amp. And I start banging on the amp, and I was like, and then when the chorus came back around, then I was like, oh, it's cool, we're good now. And everybody thought it was the amp, but it was your boy right here.
That's smooth, dude. That's smooth.
I am going to take that.
We ended up playing the bridge again when it came around, and I was fine. I just blanked. Oh. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, and if anybody doesn't know that track, Street Life, the reason why it can be tricky, that bridge, is because it changes key. It goes into a completely different key, and there's a bunch of 2/5s, and there's like it's a whole thing. So yeah, man, that's smooth. I actually love telling the disaster stories.
Me too.
I revel in the disaster stories because I think that everybody has them. Everybody. Like the greatest of the great, Jacko will have had disaster stories.
Yes.
Victor Wooten, Marcus, all of those guys have got like really great disaster stories.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually really fantastic for musicians, especially that are trying to get into sort of like being a professional musician, to hear that shit, because we need to prepare them. We need to be like, oh, by the way, like there's going to be some bad. There's going to be some bad times.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
it humanizes you.
A couple times, you know, when not much is happening and, you know, friends in town, they're like, hey, man, why don't you come do the open mic? And I'm like, I don't really have that kind of, you know, I don't sit around learning all the song, all the current stuff. And, you know, but they were like, just come on, you'll be fine. And I went on and did it. And for the most part, I was cool. But I remember one night, we did like a 4-hour gig, and it was about 3.5 hours. I was cool. And so I took a break. Another bass player came and sat in, and he did a killing job. But then the leader was like, okay, Hubert, we need you to come to the stage. We're going to close out. So I went up, and they called a Stevie Wonder tune that I know. I heard it a million times. I never played it.
Yeah.
And... Man, all those compliments and all that, the praise that you guys gave me, you would have been like, So all of the good stuff that I played that night, I ruined it with that, you know. And so,
no way.
Hey, man.
I mean, you have to have,
it was,
it's a yin yang, you know, it's balance.
I think it was Do I Do. Something like that.
Oh,
dude,
yeah.
Dude, I was literally in my mind thinking, I wonder if it was Do I Do, because it's, because Stevie Wonder, that dude's a tricky dude. He's tricky.
And you know what? Yeah. When I got home, I you know, because it killed my ego, I said, okay, I got to learn it. It's easy. It's very easy. Yeah. But when you're on stage and you've never played it, and if open mic is not something that you do on a regular basis, it's really challenging.
Of course.
So to all
the unison lines,
some of the baddest musicians are the musicians playing in the city, man. Just open mic, and they know every song, and you know.
You're
so
right.
my hat off to them. I'm not that guy.
Do you find that you would say? Do you say yes or no to things based on if you think that you're going to be the right person for the gig? I mean, are you always saying yes to things, or do you find that you really reserve your yes for the things that you think that you'll be a great fit for?
I definitely reserve my yes. I don't say yes to everything, especially now with social media and recording. You know, a few bad recordings, you know, can really ruin things for you. And to me, it's all about being honest. You know, I know what my strengths are. I know what my weaknesses are. So I try to play to my strengths and work on my weaknesses, but I'm not taking no gigs on my weaknesses. Not, you know, that's just smart. Doesn't make sense to me.
I know some guys that have actually great players that have had, that have been through the, that experience of somebody putting something online with them playing, and then they've watched it and thought, I don't sound great. And they've had to reach out. They've had to say, hey, you know, like, I appreciate you at the gig, but I really am not happy with my playing on that video. Please take it down, and that whole thing. And sometimes it can get a bit sticky as well, because sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're like, nah, I'm not taking it down. So then you have to do the copyright strike, all of that stuff. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, everybody knows now. Your bad night is on YouTube. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Scott Meehan could be talking about you. It's like, oh, my.
Man, it is all love. And something you said too that I just want to repeat, and that I think is so critical, is that thing that you're doubling down on. Like, you may not be the strongest reader. That really resonates with me, because I am a terrible reader, terrible. My ear takes over. And when you said that you sang that solo, and then, you know, like talking about like, you know, I'm not the guy that's going to see the chord chart and know exactly what to play over this blistering set of changes. I really resonate with that. And I've come to grips with who I am as a player and the my strengths and weaknesses. And you just need to know that for somebody like me or a lot of people listening, when you talk about that, I mean, we're talking to the great Hubert Eaves. Like when you talk about that, it's very encouraging. Like you are doubling down on your strength so well. And when you're singing that solo, I thought that's what you were going to say because it sounds so lyrical and lovely. It's a bass solo that I want to listen to. And I don't love bass solos in general. I'm not like a, oh man, I can't wait for that moment where I get a bass solo. But if it's part based or it's sung, it's so lovely. And so you just need to know that telling these stories, the detrimental stories of like, you know, I had a bad night or your bad night is up on YouTube. You need to know that like your legacy speaks for itself and those things do not tarnish your reputation. It is certainly in my eyes, or I know in Scott's eyes, it's like, it just lets us get a little closer to you. And that is a gift, sir. That's a gift.
Oh yeah, man. And just bouncing off that as well. Like there was a moment in my life where like I had a real hang up about reading in my past. I felt really underconfident with it. It wasn't something that I wasn't driven to do it. I wanted to just focus on different things. And I was sitting, talking with Gary Willis, who was like a hero of mine. I was like, Gary. And we were talking about reading. And in my mind, I was like, I just thought, oh yeah, Gary Willis, he'd just be able to read the fly shit off your windshield, right? Yes. He'd just be sort of like and we were talking about reading and he was like, nah, I've never really worked on it. I was like, what? He was like, well, yeah, I can read a bit, but it's not my thing, man. You just got to pick your thing and do your thing. And for me, it was like really liberating. It was like, it's like almost somebody took the handcuffs off. I was like, oh, that was amazing. So I think that my point is that people hearing you speak, Hubert, about your experience and your creative approach, I think will have the same experience for them. I think that, you know, we're all focused on different things. And I think that we can't be everything. I think that leaning into what you do is really admirable. And I'm sort of like, and I think that for other bass players out there that are on that path to be, you know, hopefully a great musician, I think hearing those stories that you were telling would be really helpful for them.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much, man. I really, really appreciate that. And it's all true, man. You just be yourself. Like, you know, back to that question Ian asked me earlier about to a lot of the younger musicians, no matter what instrument you play, be yourself and you'll figure out exactly where you want to go and you'll pick your spots. And that's what it's all about. Because like Scott said, we all can't be everything. You know, we can't. Right. Some guys and girls and in between, and they can do. They're just blessed. They're anointed. They can play anything. Right. And some of us got to work a little harder. Some of us, you know, we play a role, but whatever it is, you'll figure it out and you'll get there. You know, it's a journey that just doesn't stop. You know, I'm still learning. I'm still trying to figure out where I want to go and what I want to do. And
oh, dude, me too. Me too, dude. Same. Like, I think we all are, right? In all areas of my life, bass, kids, like, the whole parenting, being a husband.
Yes.
This shit's real.
That's right.
Hubert. I want to take this time just to say a massive thanks for coming on, man. Like, really, it has been a huge, huge honor for Ian and myself to say, like, knowing like what an inspiration you were to us in our past. It is like a pinch me moment for me. I'm sure it's for Ian as well. So I just want to say a massive thanks for coming on. You too, Ian.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for the gift of your time and inspiration and just encouragement and insight. It's just been awesome and really, really, truly a gift for us. So thank you, man.
Hey, the pleasure is all mine. And I'm very, very, very thankful to you guys and to your audience. And I'm here for you, man. Anytime, if you're ever in town, you want to hang, you just want to talk, hit me up and we're good.
Dude, the talk show, dude, the talk show.
It's on. It is on.
It is on. Thanks for listening, everybody, and tuning in this week. We will see you, as always, on the next upload. And again, if you want to check Hubert out, you've got a website as well, Hubert, right? Let me find it. What's the URL?
It's Hubert Eves, IV, HubertEvesIV.com.
Yeah, that's easy. HubertEvesIV.com. Yeah. And then you're on Instagram. And is your main sort of like social media thing Instagram, or do you do Facebook as well?
I do Facebook too, yeah. I'm trying to get my social media thing together, man. I've never really been like zoned in on it, but now I have to. So yeah, hit me up. I need the followers. Come on, y'all.
Dudes, go hit. We will make sure to send lots of people.
Yes, indeed.
We'll send everybody your way for sure. Take it easy, Hubert. I'll see you in a bit.
Okay, guys. Ian, take care.
See you soon. Dude. Yep. Bye, man.